Hello! Welcome to episode 4F12, the Itchy and Scratchy and Pooche Show. Original air date, February 9th, 1997. I'm Josh Weinstein, executive producer, showrunner.
I am David Cohen, the writer of the episode.
This is Yardley Smith, the voice of Lisa Simpson.
And I'm Steve Moore, the director of the show.
This is Matt Groening, creator of Itchy.
Hi, I'm Alex Rocco, and I'm playing Roger Myers, Jr. I was a guest star in this episode.
And we love Alex Rocco because nobody else has your voice, and it's so perfect for Roger Myers, so we are very happy to have you here.
Yay!
Yay!
I was very frightened the first time. I've never done a voiceover.
Oh,
this
yeah?
This is my very first show. And thanks to Yardley and Dan and Nancy, they just held my hand. I mean, I've been doing this acting thing for 40 years, but I was so scared.
But nobody can see you sweat.
Yeah. No, thank
Here,
God.
Here, let me give you a handkerchief.
Right, and I didn't have to shave for the job.
What is the most valuable lesson you learned from those other long-time voiceover pros?
I noticed, not with The Simpsons, but I started to do voiceovers after that. And I was an ant. I did 12 lines in A Bug's Life, John Lasseter. And the money was so wretched, I decided to get into voiceover. Yeah, it was just wonderful and fun. But I was born on The Simpsons, and I never thought I would do that kind of thing. And then once I was in the market up in Carpinteria, where I live, up near Santa Barbara, and some little kid told his mom, that's Roger Myers, Jr. She said I was the owner of Itchy and Scratchy, and I thought I got an award. I was so moved. And that's a true story.
The kids are all over it.
Here's a little cut item from an early version of the script in this scene when they're discussing the low ratings of Itchy and Scratchy. In an old version, Krusty suggested replacing it with a boing sound effect. That would get a higher rating.
Now, do you want to talk about the origins of this episode?
Yes, I would love to. This episode, it's kind of ironic. This episode was a commentary, intended to be a commentary, on what it was like to work on a beloved show that had been on the air for a long time and was nearing possibly the end of its run. Well, of course, we were a little off the mark in that guess in season 8, not having been even at the midpoint.
We honestly thought it was like 10 seasons and that would be it.
Yeah, well, that would have been a tremendous run for any TV show. So we thought, well, at this point, this was the early years of the internet, and we were starting to see fan feedback on the internet, and people were saying the worst episode ever.
Right, and if that was
the
worst episode ever, we had to print out on the Doc Matrix printer to see worst episode ever. Now we can just call it up on the screen.
So we wanted to make, I guess the origin was that I wanted to make the point that the show could be as good as ever, but obviously, when it came out in season 1, it was unlike anything anyone had ever seen before. When season 8 comes on, it's kind of like the previous 7 seasons. So even if the quality of the writing, acting, animation, music, everything is great, it doesn't have the shock value or the impact that it had at the beginning. But that doesn't mean it's a bad show. It's a great show.
No, and that's what we'd often use Itchy and Scratchy episodes to comment on our own show.
Well, I'd like to add something. I don't know if you remember this, but there was an executive actually suggested that we add a new character to the show, a cousin or somebody would come and live with the Simpsons. This was a serious suggestion, and it would liven up the show. As I remember, I talked to the staff about this, and this episode was to preempt that.
It's so kind of you, though, to have let the executive think that you took his suggestion and you put that guy, that random character, in with the family for this one episode.
I remember at one point they kept wanting us to put Jenny McCarthy in the show, too. That was another executive thing because they wanted to get her to sign a deal with Fox.
Oh yeah.
It was often crazy. Because executives, if you don't know, are not allowed to say anything about the show, which is why it's so good. And this show also comments, I have to say, because like when we were doing the show, and David too, we were pretty young and ignorant. This was our first real television experience. And then after leaving The Simpsons and going out into the real world, this episode is so very true. And there are like 5 lines that I'll point out throughout the episode that Bill and I are constantly quoting because that executives really say, but the sad point is at this point, we're often saying the lines too, meaning them like, attitude, sunglasses. And you're like, well, I guess maybe a character of sunglasses would like him. It's pathetic. But it's very, this is a very real comment on working on TV too.
By the way, that was Lisa just stating the origin of the episode, pretty much verbatim what I just said a second ago. So,
now, what I love about this, this is the writer's room, and you've animated them to look like the actual writers who wrote on The Simpsons at the time,
that's
yes?
That's me, David Cohen, on the lower right.
Right, there goes David.
Oh,
David, there's
good.
Bill, me, Josh, I'm still wearing that shirt today, George Meyer.
Oh, I didn't know
George
that.
Meyer was in the hat and beard, so that's Bill.
George Meyer still appears and is written into the show on occasion. In fact, a show I'm directing right now.
Originally, the head writer of the show in the script was named Josh Oakley.
And I want to comment too. Harry's voices for all the writers are really insulting. They're all like, they're like, I'm a writer, and it's like, I don't think we.
The funny thing is, I've heard some of the cast members do impressions of some of the writers that are pretty good, and so they had to go out of their way to make us sound so far off the mark.
Right. This, all the writers are crazy.
They had to take joy in that.
Now, was Roger Myers fashioned after anyone in particular?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, the thrill of doing the character was, you know, it was very hip in 1997. Well, it's hip now to do a Simpson.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like Spielberg wants to get on that show. So then I didn't know what to do, and the director, and I'm embarrassed to say, who was the director of that episode? Do you recall?
Well, what was the first Roger Myers episode?
I think it was Gene Scratchy and Marge.
Scratchy and Marge.
The John Swartzwelder script.
Yeah. Anyway, I was doing like a character, and he said, no, just be yourself. And then I saw Roger Myers. I said, I'm not a very nice person.
Here's one of the lines that we have said constantly for the last 10 years. That, by the way, that's David Silverman.
As the animator.
And it looks like him. And he also plays the tuba, which is in the background.
Yeah, the network executive is played by Tress McNeil, but it's not based on anyone in particular.
No, she's sort of a conglomeration of many executives that we ended up running.
And by the way, you were talking about how we were young and not necessarily that bitter yet, but many of the lines, which I think you're quoting, were pitched by George Meyer, I believe, who was already bitter at the time. And
but
therefore
still young. Young,
but young already
and
bitter.
And already bitter. Look, they're adding a new character to Itchy
and Scratchy. Actually, I think that network executive is now Lindsay Nagel.
yeah, probably.
Now here's Roy.
Roy.
The origin of Roy, wasn't he originally in the time travel Halloween episode at one point?
Yes, I believe that was it. It written by Greg Daniels, or was it Dan McGrath? Greg Daniels, I think.
It was one of them.
And they had, yeah, there was alternate reality, I think, where Roy lived with the family, and that got cut. But I always wanted to resuscitate a character named Roy, because my old friend Roy Carvalho, one of my oldest and best friends, has the same name, Roy. therefore, I resuscitated the name Roy in his honor for this episode.
And I love that we offer no explanation whatsoever for Roy's presence and ultimately his exit, right? Don't we just sort of suddenly
there is
he's
an
gone?
Explanation for his exit.
Is
he,
there?
He had an offer to go live with two beautiful ladies.
Oh.
That's me.
There's David, and he always wore a squid shirt, and do you still have the squid shirt?
Yes, more about me. That's my one spoken line in the history of the Simpsons.
Are you the PA taking a lunch order? Is that what you're doing?
No, that was me, the writer, saying we were eating rotisserie chicken.
Which is very true.
And
people eat a lot of rotisserie chicken.
So that was Harry Shearer doing my voice. You can judge for yourself how hard he tried.
Yeah. You know, this particular scene is kind of fun because auditioning for all these big shots, and I play a big shot, Roger Myers, I could fire them and say, take a hike. It gave me a lot of power and freedom with the character.
This is a really good scene.
By the way, we can't let it go by without acknowledging the great Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Attitude, eh? Not in your face, huh? Well, you can cram it with walnuts.
That's what I was thinking.
That sounds like it's either from you or Bill.
Maybe that's why I like
you.
Really,
guys
that's how you got the job,
with,
right?
With
it's
insults
Lisa.
That are you were insult- sound dirty, but aren't.
I don't get to be a cop. This is so funny because you always hear stories about actors who got the job because they told off the director or the producer, but then if you try to do that as an actor in an audition, they kick you out, you never hear from them again.
It never works.
It has to be completely spontaneous, and you're ready to walk out the door.
That's not a writer, but I guess Harry thought it was. Oh, now I love this. This is a weird super meta thing because it's Tress doing the voice of a veteran voiceover actor, and so it's like Tress, but it's not.
And her name is June, which is a reference to June Foray, the legendary voice actor who is the voice of
Rocky,
Jay Squirrel, and Granny, who owns Tweety,
and many, many others.
And many
she actually
others.
Did the Simpsons
hundreds.
Once.
Yeah,
that's right.
Then they doubled it up on the
soundtrack. Cheap and Tress MacNeille might be the June Foray of today in the sense
really
that she does
is.
So many
yeah.
different voices.
She's so brilliant. She's so clever.
Oh, a note about the name Poochie. I originally pitched this episode, but I didn't have a name. I just called him the dog. In fact, I called him the millionaire dog, which I'll get back to in a second. But Rich Appel is the one who proposed the name Poochie to go with Itchy and Scratchy.
When Itchy plays Scratchy's skeleton like a xylophone, he strikes the same rib twice in succession. Yeah,
and this is a reference to the William Shatner thing, is it?
This is a reference to all our fans.
I think you guys have all had to deal with something like this.
Well, when I read now on the internet, I imagine these voices coming out of the little messages and of course the comic book guy. You know, and it also so when they criticize the show or they get something wrong about us, I just imagine it's the comic book guy saying it, and I go, oh, so what?
Yeah. Several people have asked me if I'm the voice of comic book guy. By the way, I'm not.
Are you?
That voice I love. Nancy
I love
Cartwright
that's
brilliant. Database. I love that voice.
That's Nancy Cartwright doing that.
That's to me like fingernails on a blackboard. That voice drives me crazy.
If there's about 2 minutes to spare, I can tell the plot of an original Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie the Millionaire episode, which was in the original pitch for the show.
Yeah.
The idea was that Poochie would be obnoxious, not because he was so cool, but because he was an obnoxious millionaire. So the original cartoon, which I had written in the outline, was that here it is. I'm just going to read it. Itchy and Scratchy are laborers in Poochie's gold mine. Poochie sits on a velvet throne surrounded by bags of money. He drinks champagne as he whips Itchy and Scratchy and lectures them on the value of hard work in a capitalist society. Finally, Itchy and Scratchy get fed up and plan their revenge. They decide Scratchy will present a fake money bag to Poochie. Itchy will secretly be hiding in the bag. When Poochie raises the bag to inhale the sweet smell of money, Itchy will jab him in the nose with a syringe of poison. Itchy gets in the bag and Scratchy presents it to Poochie, but the plan backfires because Poochie is offended by how small the money bag is. To demonstrate how worthless it is to him, he sets it on fire and uses it to light his cigar. Itchy's flaming skeleton falls out of the burning bag, and the syringe lands on Scratchy's toe and kills him, too. Poochie says, oh, well, I can always use my millions of dollars to hire more workers. That's the power of money. The end.
Fox asked us not to mention the power of money.
I love this rogue credits of the Teen Scratchy food.
The cool take was much better and a much better commentary.
It was also like
TV.
At the time, too, it was the beginning of extremism in things with a lot of attitude, like in soda ads and stuff. And there is a cartoon character that's very similar to Poochie, but I think it's a funky bear, but wears a backwards baseball cap and sunglasses.
I've heard that kids of a certain age, 6, 7, whatever, love Poochie in a non-ironic way.
That's right.
My kids are just getting
there.
We had Poochie come back. Oh, boy, it's Poochie again.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I think my kids would have liked it better if we had kept Poochie.
He's totally in my face. There's such a maniacal look to that cat.
I think I later did an episode where Poochie gets run over. Like, he was written into a show where he was supposed to be run over or killed or something like that. Just out of spite.
Midge, help me out here. Midge, I love that he calls her Midge.
Now, that quiet, you're missing the jokes, is a thing that we always ran into, at least with writers, like we were watching with like our spouses or friends, and it's like, stop talking, you're missing the jokes.
Same with us.
But of course, we'll just keep talking. Now, David, you wrote Poochie's rap, too, right?
I did, except for the last line, you the fool I pity. I remember, I think Donna Carey replaced whatever used to be there with that improvement. But I think I wrote the rest of it.
Homer, I can honestly say that was the best episode of MP.
And I always hope people would complain more about the fact that half Joe Camel and a third Fonz really only adds up to 5/6 of the character.
Something they missed.
People seem okay with that.
So it was pretty okay, huh? Mom, can we go to bed without dinner?
Yes, we can.
It's sad even Marge can't find it. Nice to say.
It's a new low.
This is a painfully accurate portrayal of what goes through the writer's mind when watching something that you're not that proud of, and you're trying to convince yourself that you're just bored of it, but that it was pretty good.
That's often if Phil and I have done something and didn't get a good reaction, go, well, that was the best episode of Ippy and Chimpy I ever saw.
That's a product of committee thinking. You can't be cool just by spouting a bunch of worn-out buttons.
Oh, there was a different misnaming of the show by Marge in an earlier... In early version, Marge is the one who doesn't know the name, and she calls it Starchy and Kitty.
Last night's It Seems Scratchy was, without a doubt, the worst episode ever.
There it is. Early commentary on the internet.
My disgust throughout the world.
Hey, I know it wasn't great, but what right do you have to complain?
As a loyal viewer...
This is basically just the writer's bitterness pouring out of Bart's mouth.
It's caused, and ever since then, there's a lot of debate and discussion about it on the internet.
Really?
For the venerable Itchy and Scratchy program, for years, TV critics such as yours truly, Kent Brockman, have waited impatiently for cracks to appear in the show's hilarious...
This is also an observation. We always felt like reviewers, or amateur or professional, were desperately searching for the moment where they could proclaim that The Simpsons had begun its downward spiral.
And sure.
Everyone wanted to be the first to accurately predict that.
When this puppy is put to sleep.
Don't you love that Krusty's head is a different color than his arms?
Crumminess and poochie.
It's clown makeup.
And now there's something typical here in TV and with executives. They'll often suggest something, and then you'll go like, I'm a nice guy, I'll execute it. And they go, well, that wasn't very good. But you suggested it, but you can't win.
You can't win.
Hi, Mr. Myers. I've been doing some thinking, and I got some ideas to improve the...
Now, some other writers, I think that's supposed to be Dan McGrath sitting next to me.
Yeah, we had we drew almost the whole writing staff for this one.
And
we tried to fit them in.
And did they give you photos of themselves for accuracy, or did you just know?
I think we must have had photos.
Yeah, but the crazy thing is, especially seeing in the later, and it only affects like 9 people on Earth, but they're not drawn to the correct height. So, yeah, I have to say, I hope someone got fired for that one.
Yeah,
it's very disturbing.
I'm sure
people
someone
are 6
did.
Feet being 5 feet.
That was Donna Carey with the unibrow, I noticed at the table
now,
the list.
This incident is based on a real reported incident that in the book The Late Shift and the show, which is based on when Jay Leno was very concerned about getting... Was it Carson's spot at that point? I can't remember.
No,
and
yes.
Letterman.
And he overheard it.
That's right. And he actually... The story goes that he actually snuck into a closet next to the boardroom and overheard.
I never put it together. Right.
Yeah, so that's what that's based on.
It's those lousy writers.
Oh, the squid shirt I was wearing, by the way, yes, that is based on the fact that I have, over the years, have had about 20 squid shirts. And I'm wearing one today in honor of this, a more modern one.
And do you like squid, or what's the deal with
squid.
That?
What is it?
As a pet, or as a...
Well, my dad's a marine biologist, so I spend a lot of time up in Woods Hole, Massachusetts.
Of course.
And
yes,
much study there. So.
I just TiVo'd 2 documentaries about Humboldt squid.
Those big squid
those big
that
big
wash
squid
up that, sometimes
that
down in California.
People. Yeah.
They're scary. People. They're like 3 feet long or something, right?
Yeah, and longer and bigger. Yeah.
There's the squid.
And this is also where it's very disturbing that everyone's the same height. Oh, there's also that's Ned Goldmeyer on the
you
right.
You all look very tall to us, animators.
That's in real life, I'm puny
like
and goes very tall. That's Ron Howge and Ian Maxtone Graham, who's also the very extremely tall
who
guy.
Who is the tallest?
It helps to have glasses or a mustache or something for a caricature. Like, my character looks great because I had... That particular month, I had a goatee, which I never had before since, but
yeah,
it made my caricature pretty good, though.
We had to add Mike Scully later, because apparently we never got his photo, and so we were asked specifically to add it as a retake.
Really?
After
fantastic.
After the show came back from Korea.
Oh, that's crucial.
Yes.
I like the animation of doing Roger Myers large on the screen to show his power.
Yes, he's a driving force.
Now, the funny thing is that they have the female voiceover character doing the voice of Itchy and Scratchy, but that was Dan's voice actually coming out of the female character's mouth. So Dan was doing Homer, and he was doing...
Oh, that was Dan?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. I was thinking of Harry who did that.
Dan and Harry.
Dan and Harry do Itchy and Scratchy, and I can remember...
So that character of June is being played by 2 people. In
that's
other
right.
Words. Or 3, maybe.
That's right, and Meep,
Dan.
Meep, Meep.
And 2 different genders. That's how good that cartoon voice actor is.
The magic of animation.
But the new one's going to be better than 10 Super Bowls.
That's also a line that we're constantly saying whenever we have a new project. This is going to be better than 10 Super Bowls.
Yes, I certainly do. I have to go now. My planet needs me.
I actually had to plan that out for the animators.
And did you actually lift the cell up?
Well, I told them how to lift the cell up. I actually indicated on a piece of paper where I wanted the images to hit, and that's actually my handwriting on the screen.
That's why you got the credit of executive cell lifter, because you just told other people how to lift
the cell. That's fantastic.
Well, they're so used to us correcting their mistakes that... you know, when we actually ask them to do a mistake, I think it's difficult.
Never, ever, ever return! This document conforms to all...
That's Mr. Burns' lawyer, right? His name?
He's the standard
he's
lawyer.
He's also Krusty's lawyer, I guess.
And that's Dan Castellaneta doing his voice.
I love the single card of erasing a character, just writing. Everybody says, how can you get rid of that character?
Like this.
An apartment with two sexy ladies.
There you go. A perfectly
Bye,
good excuse to get rid of him.
It'll be on the CW next year.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing is, I lost creative control of the project. And I forgot to ask for any money. Well, live and learn.
Is that reflective of the writer's feelings?
We never forget to ask for money.
We don't get any. And then...
Oh.
Back to the basics, classic Itchy and Scratchy. We should thank our lucky stars. They're still putting on a program of this caliber after so many years.
Yeah, you fantastic.
So that's the moral of the story.
If there's anything you owe us.
Back to the basics.
Send your checks to.
Well, that might be my favorite of the ones I wrote, but there are several I haven't seen recently, so I reserve the right to say that again at a later time.
But I will say on the internet, our fans, it is one of the universal favorites.
It's a great one.
Wow, Brad Bird was still on the show.
Yeah, Brad was still on the show.
Well, it was a joy and a pleasure to work for this team.
Yeah,
well,
thank you. Likewise. Yeah. Worst commentary ever.